Okay, here we go. We're up to Rabbi Yaakov Emden, part two. So where did we leave off? We did Svarim. We did his childhood.
We ended his childhood.
Starting against Rabbi Anderson Eibschitz. Now, the making of a dispute, right? Making of a gadol, making of a dispute. So there were a few factors. Number one was he lived in Altoona. Yeah? I came to learn that it's not Altoona, it's Altoona. Yeah? A few academics pronounce it like that. Yeah, Altoona, professors, Altoona. So, Altoona, he lived in the same... Altoona is next door, part of Hamburg. So, Hamburg is the biggest city. Altoona is a sub-city, sub-part of Hamburg. So, Wandsbek as well. Hamburg is the metropolis. Wandsbek and Altoona are the neighboring parts. But for the Yiddish purposes, not the language, the Jewish kehila purposes, they were all united as one, the Gimel kehilas. The three kehilas of Ahu, Altoona, what? No, that's Hungary. Wrong country. Yeah. That was Oberlanders and stuff like that. So, now we're, where are we? So now we're in Altoona, and he is living in Altoona. Okay? Altoona was part of the Danish kingdom. Yeah? Not the food. Yeah? And Hamburg was part of the Roman Catholic... What was Germany? Germany in the 1700s was under what rule? Yeah, I think the Prussia? Prussia. Haps? I don't even know. Anyone check your history, but they were not in the same. The reason being that one of the forms of influence that a person could have in those days, nowadays we have these guys, and they do lots and lots of things. Anyone who can't see me, I'm holding a phone. Yeah. So you have those, and that has such far-reaching effects, as we saw, Baruch Hashem, in many good ways. You just post something, and people just give you things, right, after you post. And it's magical. So that's what they had back then. They didn't have that reach. What you had to do was you had to print stuff. Now, Rabbi Yaakov Emden had his own printing press. He got permission from the ruler of the Danish Empire, which was Altoona was part of, and he had his own printing press, which is a game changer. Reason being because Denmark, Danish. Reason being because if you have the power of the press, you don't have to go and try to get your articles into the newspaper. You don't have to get your svarim to the printing press. You just print them. And that's how he wrote so many things. Fine. Now, what did it actually say? So, did we mention last time Atbash?
No,
you and I spoke about it. Yes. So someone asked, the first time we spoke about Rabbi Anderson Eibschitz, so how did they decipher what was in the Kamea? What were in these amulets? What was inside? So, the way they did it was a very simple thing. Again, which is not so simple. That, we know the letters, they correspond to each other. Aleph, Tuf, can be interchanged. At, Bash, Beis, and as we go, right? Aleph, Tuf, Beis, Shin, fine. We're not going to go any further because no one knows if you pass that, right? So, At, Bash, right? At, Bash. So, as you use Atbash and you go through this Kamea, anytime you can't read, again, this is supposedly, I don't know this firsthand, and even the people who know it firsthand are relying on someone else who saw and deciphered it themselves, right? So, as you get to any part that's indiscernible or incomprehensible, if you do an Atbash, you will quickly spell out Melech HaMashiach Shabtai Tzvi. Okay, there it is. So, game over. He's a Sabbatean, and nothing more to talk about. So now, how do you get out of that? Are they definitely his? Question number one. Question number two.
Maybe it wasn't Atbash.
Another variation, right? Yeah, it happens to be with that variation of applying every Atbash when not necessarily to every single letter.
Uh-huh.
Right? So can any variable change and thereby change the outcome? But it definitely was a starting point for a war. And therefore, what did Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz do, as we mentioned? He went and he got up after these accusations were thrown at him. He gets up in the Beis HaKnesses HaGadol in the Gimel Kehillas, which is in Hamburg, I believe. I don't know which one of the Kehillas. Don't quote me on that one. He gets up in the Beis HaKnesses HaGadol of the three Kehillas, and he publicly takes out a Sefer Torah, makes a Shvua. I am not a Shvua b'Nikitas Chefetz. A Shvua d'Oraisa. Yeah? And says, I am not anything. I have nothing to do with Shabtai Tzvi and his following, and I publicly denounce and put anyone who's a Shabtai Tzvinik into Chayr. So this is Mamashir Taina from last time. You're on the money. I think so. So Reb Yaakov Emden, his retort back is Shkoyach. This is exactly what Shabtai Tzvi guys do. They're over Isui Doraisa, and then trample on them to try to mask their real identity. So if he were to be a real Shabtai Tzvinik and Reb Yonasan Eibshitz was a real bona fide Shabtai Tzvi follower, so what do? You take halachas, swearing on a Sefer Torah, you deliberately transgress them, and then fool everyone, and then promote and promulgate. How do you say that word?
Promulgate,
thank you. Promulgate. Yeah, we're not going to say it again. That Shabtai Tzvi is the Mashiach because of your hidden or not so hidden beliefs. So, where does this lead us? It only leads us to a massive machlekes. Okay? Now, so this is the irony of a good machlekes, right? I remember when I went to Eretz Yisrael, I was there. First time I came there was 13 years ago. Came there as a bachur 12 years ago. And there was this new thing about a new machlekes between gedolim. And I was so shooken up. Gedolim fight. Did I mention this?
No.
Gedolim fight. I was traumatized. I'm a good kid from West Hempstead. Yeah. Rabbis are just, they don't disagree with anybody. And someone's like, do you know anything about history? Do you know anything? So at the time, I didn't know much. And there's been many machlekes, and we could start with Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel, machlekes in halacha, machlekes in hashkafa, and some of them weren't so pretty. So the irony is that many of those gedolim did not ever sit down face to face. Now, whose fault is that? It could be their inner circle that are, for some reason, wishing to flame the fire, fan the flames, thank you. And therefore, they didn't allow for the meeting because, if they would meet, maybe they'd figure it out. It's not very clear if they actually met. But, again, this is like every hardlining machloikas. If you meet, that means you're willing to entertain that there's another option. And neither of them were willing to entertain the other option. Yaakov Emden was absolutely convinced. There's no one to talk to because anything he says, I will not trust him. And Reb Yonasan Eibshitz, absolutely not. I am the Rav of the Gimel Kehillas. I have denounced it. There's no conversation here. I am not a Shabtai Tzvinik. That's it. So there's no conversation. So it was a non-starter to try to make some sort of connection, try to make some sort of dialogue. There's no dialogue to be had. So this continues to go and continues further and further and further. And one thing also with Reb Yaakov Emden, which I wanted to highlight a few examples, is that Reb Yaakov Emden was never afraid to say whatever he wanted. Whatever he wanted. He said some extreme, extreme things. Even if you look, some of my favorites. So I'm, everyone has their struggles. I'm a Pirkei Avos junkie. Okay? So his Pirush on Pirkei Avos, he wrote, besides four, recommended, wrote the Siddur, as we mentioned. He wrote the, help me out, the Pirush on the tour, Merv Tzia. He also wrote Megillah Sefer. He wrote countless pamphlets against Shabtai Tzvi followers. And he also wrote a full Pirush on Mishnayis and Hagoyis on Shas, the entirety of Shas. And Hagoyis on many, many works. Yeah? Everywhere. Shulchan Aruch, I don't recall. He wrote Shailos HaTshuvos, Shailos HaYavos. We mentioned this last week. So, if you look in his Pirush Lechem Shamayim, so there's a few arrows over here. Fascinating stuff. He goes and he writes, the following. The pasuk goes and says, the Mishnah goes and says, that hafachba v'hafachba, referring to learning Torah, you should turn it over this way, that way, uba sechaza, and look into it, v'sivu v'leva, and, you know, really get knee deep, uminala sazua, don't veer off of the Torah for a moment. But what's the stress? The kulaba. If you learn the Torah, you got everything. And in here, you're supposed to insert the story with the Chazon Ish and the brain surgery. Anyone? Right? The Chazon Ish told the neurologist how to do the brain surgery. He never went to medical school. How did he know it? The answer is, the Torah has everything. Great. That's the Mishnah. So, Rabbi Yaakov Emden is coming and addressing this very point. So, is there any place for Chachma Chitzoyna? Sounds like a debated point back then and today. And this is something we've always mentioned, right? The Ramah and the Marshal, they sparred over this, right? The Marshal didn't like the Ramah because he learned a little bit too much astronomy for the Marshal's liking, okay? And he knew a little bit too much Diktuk. Yeah? That's a big problem, right? Because you should learn more Gemara, right? And this has been a recurring struggle. What's the balance? So Rabbi Yaakov Emden goes and writes, you know, and you find all these Sifrei Philosophim, right? All these big philosophers, Aristotle, Plato, yeah, Socrates, you name it. And he says, and I found a certain Sefer, and this is only Rabbi Yaakov Emden talks like this and writes like this. I found a certain Sefer, and there was a Sefer HaYevani, a Greek Sefer, that went through all the midos possible. Yeah, a fabulous sefer, a very, very large sefer. And he says that it's really a waste of time. Yeah, and whatever content that's worthwhile is overshadowed by the pages and pages of wasted time. And then in parentheses, he writes, and as chatayani mazkra yoyim, obviously, I went through the whole thing, and I'm telling you from my own personal knowledge, right? And he's not embarrassed to say this, as you see in the whole Megillah Sefer. The way he writes and what he writes, nothing was beneath him, nothing was out of reach or out of line. He'll say whatever he wants, and he would throw these accusations at Rabbi Yonasan Eifshitz, albeit knowing that he's going to have severe repercussions from the Rabbi Yonasan Eifshitz followers. And
was the whole city, or did he have a following?
So he had a following because the Gedolim supposedly were willing to at least look into it, which means that he had at least accomplished to make a suffix. The Pnei Yeshua was the predecessor of Rabbi Yonasan Eifshitz in the city of Metz, right? The city of Metz, the German and French border. City of Metz, they had the biggest gedolim. So the procession was, the Pnei Yeshua was thereof, he went to Frankfurt. Yonasan Eifshitz was thereof, he went to Hamburg. And then they got the Chagas Aryeh. Not too shabby. Yeah? So the Pnei Yeshua was the elder Rav in Frankfurt, and he demanded and was mazmin Rabbi Yonasan Eifshitz to come to Beis Din. And he didn't come. Okay? It's not going to do anything good. And this is where many people go and try to, this is really conjecture, surmise that Haskalah made the biggest inroads after this decay of rabbinic authority. Because all it showed the Hamon Am, the masses, was, okay, how many cheirims can you level against each other that no one will listen to and completely ignore each other? And these are the people of that fold. These are the people of that sect. Okay, great. Now there's another, you know, sect that's forming or reform of sorts in each Haskalah manifestation. So that's definitely had a very ill effect. No. This machlokes was over Shabtai Tzvi or not. It brought out put Rabbanim in a very, very bad light, because everyone took a side. and people didn't even have any dialogue whatsoever. So it's just a bunch of bickering rabbis. Then not because the decay of the stature was due to a Shabtai Tzvi argument, but it just led to, it showed a rift, a tremendous rift, which led and was, allowed for these inroads of Haskalah. So now, I want to end off with one thing that I heard, supposedly from the Bucky on the Bucky, yeah? So, if you go to the Beis HaKvaros, I've heard the story before, and I'm just reminded of it. If you go to the Beis HaKvaros over there in Germany, in Altona, so they're 5 spaces apart. Reb Yonason Eibschitz and Reb Yaakov Emden. There's a Mrs. Emden, one of the 3. I don't know which one. Yeah, Mrs. Emden's there, and Mrs. Eibschitz is there. Yeah, safe to assume. And what happens, they're 5 spaces apart. So this is not how I would envision the story to end. Yeah? What happened? So this is a professor telling over the story.
Who died first?
What? Reb Yaakov Emden outlived Reb Yonason Eibschitz. Okay? Reb Yonason Eibschitz died in 1766. Reb Yaakov Emden died the year of the revolution, 1776. Well, he had 3 wives, yes. So which one got it? Well, yeah, no. They were buried elsewhere. Okay, he journeyed the world. He was in Amsterdam for a little bit. He was in Germany. He was in Poland. He had a long, you should read the whole Megillah Sefer. So how did it end? So this professor told over a Masoira. A Masoira, that's the story's Masoira, yeah? Masoira and academia don't meet. Yeah? Nonetheless, something has to be addressed because why are they in such close proximity? So the story goes as follows. The Chevra Kadisha was not sure what to do with the death because he should be Be'er Chelkas HaRabbanim. He died in the city of Altuna. He should be buried in the Chelkas HaRabbanim. Reb Yonason Eibschitz is already there. Where should we put him? So they went, Baruch Hashem, B'Hashkoch Elyona, someone who tried to mediate a little bit of Shalom, the Noid Behuda, who tried to mediate Shalom 15 years prior when he was much younger. Now he was already climbing the stature of Klal Yisrael's leadership. He was in Altuna at the time. They ran to him and they said, what should we do? They recommended and died. So, this is the Noid Behuda. The Noid Behuda was someone who tried to mediate Shalom between them, was not successful. And as we mentioned last week, we learned all this from him, so it's really a moot point for us, B'nai Yeshiva, who go and learn both of their Torah. So that's a backhanded Haskama, or a pretty forward Haskama, nonetheless. So what happens? B'nai Yehuda Paskins bury him next to him. Why? Because there were Aden that came to B'nai Yehuda and said the following scenario happened as he died. Reb Yaakov Emden, moments before he died, he looked, he picked up his head, he said, Shalom Aleichem, Avi Meiri, and he said, Shalom Aleichem, Reb Yonason. This is the Masoira that this professor is relaying. Clearly they had some sort of a Shalom made. Because why was Reb Yonason there to greet him? As he's about to depart onto the next world, he must have made some resolution between them, bury them next to him. You bet. Now, so what does that leave us? That leaves us with an unsolved, an unresolved machlokes. And for our intents and purposes, it doesn't matter. Because again, you can stick your head in and everyone does try to figure out who was right, who was wrong. And Reb Yonason Eibschitz's son was an outright Shabtai Tzvi follower. That's a bad sign. That's pretty bad, right? Doesn't that show that, Tati and... No, not necessarily. But there you have it. That's the machlokes. That's the background. And we'll call it a day. To be continued.